ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Chapter 9, the Lord incarnates as Mohini Murti, text 28. Evam sada sura gana samate shakala.
Evam sada sura
Hetvartha kama matayopi phaleva kalpa. Satram ritam sura gana palam anjasapur.
Satram ritam sura gana
Yatpara pankaja rajakshrayanana taitya. Evam sura sura gana samadesha kala.
Evam sura sura gana samadesha kala.
He taught the karma mateo pipale vakalpa. Tramritam sura gana palamanja sapu. Yathara pankaja raja shayanana daitya. Evam sura sura gana samadesha kala.
Evam sura sura gana samadesha kala.
Etartha karma mateo pipale vikalpa.
Etartha karma mateo pipale vikalpa.
Tramritam suragana palamanja sapu.
Tramritam suragana palamanja sapu.
Yathara pankaja raja shayananya daitya.
Yathara pankaja raja shayananya daitya.
Translation. The place, the time, the cause, the purpose, the activity, and the ambition were all the same for both the demigods and the demons. But the demigods achieve one result and the demons another, because the demigods are always under the shelter of the dust of the Lord's lotus feet. They could very easily drink the nectar and get its result. The demons, however, not having sought shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord, were unable to achieve the result they desired. Verse 4. In Bhagavad Gita 4.11, it is said, Yeyasa mam prabhajante tam stataiva prajamyaham. The Supreme Personality of God is the Supreme Judge who rewards or punishes different persons according to their surrender unto his lotus feet. Therefore, it can actually be seen that although dharmis and bhaktas may work in the same place at the same time, with the same energy and with the same ambition, they achieve different results. The karmis transmigrate through different bodies in the cycle of birth and death, sometimes going upward and sometimes downward, thus suffering the results of their actions in the karma chakra, the cycle of birth and death. The devotees, however, because of fully surrendering at the lotus feet of the Lord, are never baffled in their attempts. Although externally they work almost like the karmis, the devotees go back home, back to Godhead, and achieve success in every effort. The demons or atheists have faith in their own endeavors, but although they work very hard day and night, they cannot get any more than their destiny. The devotees, however, can surpass the reactions of karma and achieve wonderful results even without effort. It is also said, palena parichiyate. One's success or defeat in any activity is understood by its result. There are many karmis in the dress of devotees, but the Supreme Personality of Godhead can detect their purpose. The karmis want to use the property of the Lord for their selfish sense gratification, but a devotee endeavors to use the Lord's property for God's service. Therefore, a devotee is always distinct from the karmis, although the karmis may dress like devotees. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, yajyata karmanonyatra lokoyam karma bandhana. One who works for Lord Vishnu is free from this material world, and after giving up his body, he goes back home, back to God. A karmi, however, although externally working like a devotee, is entangled in his non-devotional activity, and thus he suffers the tribulations of material existence. Thus, from the results achieved by the karmis and devotees, one can understand the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who acts differently for the karmis and jnanis than for the devotees. The author of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita therefore says, Krishna bhakta nishtam atayva shanta bhakti mukti siddhi kami sakali ashanta. The karmis who desire sense gratification, the jnanis who aspire for the liberation of merging into the existence of the Supreme, and the yogis who seek material success and mystic power are all restless, and ultimately they are baffled. But the devotee who does not expect any personal benefit and whose only ambition is to spread the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is blessed with all the auspicious results of bhakti yoga without hard labor. Om Chakshun Malitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Jai Kanya Gurudanda Sri Atalitagada Shivasani Gura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Briefly today, because we end by 8:30. This is a very wonderful verse and purport as we conclude this most unusual chapter of the Lord incarnating as Mohini Murti, the female incarnation of the Lord. Now, you have heard the demon's reaction to Mohini Murti. Beautiful ways. They glorified her like any lusty man would glorify an attractive woman. They called her Vama Uru, O beautiful thighed one, Sumajja, O slim waisted one. All the appropriate comments and compliments were there in the beautiful Sanskrit language. But who are they actually talking about when they say, Vama Uru, beautiful thigh one, Sumajja, slim waisted one? They're talking about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They don't know it though. They think, look at this. This is for me. That is the material contamination. You can check yourself as soon as you feel that rising in you. This is for me. Then you know there's an infection. And as soon as you feel rising in you, this is for Krishna, then you know you're becoming healthy in spiritual life. The whole life of a devotee, a real devotee, can be summarized in that expression, this is for Krishna. This is meant for Krishna's service. No matter what a devotee sees, no matter who he or she meets, always you think, this is for Krishna's pleasure. Now, often devotees ask, how can I get that ability? It sounds good in theory. I read about it. I'd love to be on that platform, but let's be practical. My body is composed of the modes of nature. All around are the modes of nature. How am I going to ever rise to a higher platform. You have to make an effort by putting one foot in front of the other. Step. Walk forward. You see, behind this, lurking behind this feeling, oh, I'd like to do it, but I can't. It really would be great if I could do it. If I could really say, this is for Krishna. But I'm so far from that. You know, I have my desires, you know. After all, I had my astrology done and it told me I had these desires. I guess that's the way it is, huh? The grahas have indicated that I had certain material desires. I'm sure Krishna will understand that the planets have forced me to act in a certain way. Now, how do you put one foot in front of the other and start to walk in bhakti? You make an effort. You, as I was saying, lurking behind our assumption that it's too hard, it can't be done, even though it is a nice thing, it should be done. Lurking behind that assumption is our thinking, unconsciously, that Krishna is some kind of sadist who has given us an impossible process to follow. And that impossible process looks so nice. It looks so attractive. And indeed, it should be done, the bhakti process. But actually, when you think about it, when you try it, you find out it's unattainable. This is the thought that is lurking in the back of our mind. That we don't say it, of course, but indirectly we think it and act like it. Krishna is some kind of sadist who gets pleasure from seeing us try to be Krishna conscious, knowing we're going to fail. He's given us the most beautiful process of sadhana bhakti. He's given us his pastimes, his name. It's all so unlimitedly attractive, there's no doubt about it. I do accept the Shastra. It's unlimitedly attractive. But at the same time, who can really do it, you know? Who can really do it? I mean, there'll always be a few, you know, the fired up brahmacharis and, for a while. And and the monogies will be key giant for a few years. The older devotees, they may go on for a while, but sooner or later, in their 50s, they start thinking, ooh, what about the enjoyment I missed? It is possible to be Krishna conscious. Otherwise, Krishna would have never given us this process. Lord Chaitanya has come to show you it can be done. So the first thing, we have to stop thinking it's impossible that Krishna is some kind of sadist, that he's given us a beautiful process that's impossible to follow. First, you have to admit to yourself, it is possible to be Krishna conscious. Now the question is, do I want it or do I not? That is the real question. Everyone has a mission in life. Everyone has a career. Now, let's be honest. What is your mission in life? What is your career? What are you trying to do with your temporary body and senses? Where are you really at? So, in this chapter, we see where the demons are at. And indeed, that is where a demoniac civilization is at. Everything is from lust and gratification of the body. So they were attracted to Sri Mohini Murti, not knowing she's a Supreme Personality of Godhead. And they made their propositions. Oh, you're meant for me. And the other demons said, you're meant for me. In this way, you see how a materialistic civilization goes on. You see the dynamics. Everyone is claiming, this is for me. No, that is for me. Even we see in history when everyone says, this is for the state. All the property, all the resources belong to the state. Behind that facade, there's always someone who's saying, this is for me. So, let's come to grips with the real issues here. And sometimes it's hard to see the real issues. As Prabhupada writes in the purport, there are many karmis in the dress of devotees, but the Supreme Personality of Godhead can detect their purpose. Yes, Ishvara Sarvabhutana, Hridaya Sarvabhutana, Krishna is in everyone's heart. He knows what your desires are, what the effort is you're making. don't think, oh, I'm struggling so hard to be Krishna conscious. I'm trying so hard. Does Krishna really notice? Krishna notices more than you notice. This, please understand. You are an observer of your activities. To a certain extent, you know yourself. To a certain extent. But Krishna knows you better. And he is observing your activities even more than you can observe. When you understand that fully, then you can appreciate the reality of the super soul in everyone's heart. So it's not that we're struggling so sincerely, so mightily in bhakti yoga and no one notices. Krishna doesn't notice. The devotees don't notice. They don't appreciate me. My spiritual master, he may not notice. I mean, depends on who I talk to, what they tell me. Does he know his dad? Of course, he's everywhere. He's omnipresent. It all depends on who you talk to, you know. Of course, if you read Prabhupada's books, you'll get the straight scoop. That the Supreme Personality Godhead empowers the guru with everything he needs to know to guide the disciple back to Godhead. Everything he needs to know to guide you back to Godhead. Doesn't mean you go to your spiritual master and ask him what was the score in the football game in Mexico City yesterday, because you're supposed to be in contact with the super soul, so you should know all these things. No, it's not like that. The whole purpose of life, 100%, is to go back to Godhead. So the Lord empowers the guru with what he needs to know to guide you to go home back to Godhead. That is the specialized function of the spiritual master. Not to teach you how to be attached to the material world. If you want to approach a guru, you follow in Arjuna's footsteps, as he did in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. I'm bewildered, I'm confused about my duty. I don't know what to do. Now, in this consciousness, I approach you. Please instruct me. Arjuna had it all figured out why he shouldn't fight the battle of Kurukshetra. He had very good reasons. If you want reasons why not to do what Krishna says, you'll never come up with any better reasons than Arjuna's. So if you want to come up with reasons why you shouldn't surrender to Krishna, study Bhagavad Gita. The best, Arjuna gave the best reasons in chapter 1, beginning of chapter 2. But still, they were not acceptable. So if Arjuna's reasons were not acceptable, what makes us think our reasons are so wonderful and dynamic? Yes, I know Krishna consciousness is the right thing, devotional service kijai, but there's just a few reservations and conditions and problems that I have. And if Krishna is God, he'll understand. He better understand. I mean, not that I'm a non-devotee, don't get me wrong. I mean, I fully believe in devotional service. And sometimes I do, but but it's just that there are certain, I'm in a certain situation, and there are circumstances, that's it. Time plays a circumstance for me. Maybe Mahadevi Prabhu and Mahavishnu Swami may remember in the 70s, you know, a popular thing whenever you wanted to do something that in Krishna consciousness, but that wasn't quite on, it wasn't quite appropriate according to the normal understanding, and some devotee would challenge you. Immediately you retort, time, place, and circumstance, Prabhu. And then just look at the devotee and say, oh, okay, time, place, and circumstance, right. Doesn't work anymore, but it worked in the 70s. So, we always have some condition that we think, or circumstances we think, Krishna has to understand. These circumstances make my advancement in Krishna consciousness impossible, at least for the next 10 years. Certainly in the future, when I mature, in the future when I know myself better, then the bhakti will flow. But right now, Krishna should understand that it's not really possible for me to engage to the proper extent in devotional service. He ought to understand it. If he doesn't understand it, well, I'm going to have my doubts whether he knows what he's doing. I have my plans. What do you expect? It's my life. I should have some plans, and Krishna should accept these plans. In this way, because of our stubbornness, we actually impede our own spiritual advancement. Have you noticed that in yourself? The stubbornness. We get attached to something, and we don't want to let it go. And then we say to Krishna, why am I not becoming Krishna conscious? What's going on? Meanwhile, we have this stubborn attachment. And what's another thing about those stubborn attachments? You look at everyone else and you can see, oh, your attachments are so foolish. Why is that holding you back? When it comes to your own stubborn attachments, they all make perfect sense, right? Is that something? Everyone else's Maya, you can easily see. But when it comes to your own, oh well, that's different. You see, there are good reasons for why I'm doing what I'm doing, why I'm not doing what I'm doing. They're very good reasons. Krishna should understand it. I'm sure he does. If my spiritual master is bona fide, he'll understand. If not, well then, So, this is our problem, that we're so stubbornly attached to certain things, and we don't want anyone chipping away at this attachment. Mm-hmm. And then we accuse Krishna of giving us a process that's so beautiful, but it's not practical. So everything depends on what we're trying to achieve. Otherwise, the endeavor looks the same. This is what is being beautifully pointed out in this verse and purport. The karmis and bhaktas may work in the same place at the same time, with the same energy and with the same ambition, but they achieve different results. The demons in this chapter plotted so expertly to get Mohini Murti's graces. They flattered her. They were much more civilized than demoniacally behaved people today. They first inquired from Mohini Murti, you don't belong to anyone, do you? Because you're loitering here alone. You know what that means, right? Of course, where is the standard today? It's gone. Even the demons in this chapter, they're first inquiring, making sure you are available, aren't you? you're not married, right? But as they would say these days, you're not in relationship, are you? Of course, now they don't even say that. Just everything is wide open. How do your senses feel right now? Consult your senses and then act. That is supposed to be the way to judge your whole life. How do my senses feel now? Where is the understanding of the karma chakra mentioned in this purport? The cycle of birth and death. Let's talk about action-reaction and the result achieved by endeavoring in the karmic way and the result achieved by endeavoring in the devotional way. Now, let's just take yesterday, for example. I was pointing this out at the program in Dillon. Is that where it was? Yeah. I pointed out, yesterday was the warmest October 27th in recorded history. And you know, recorded history is the all in all. The warmest day ever in recorded history. So, now, how did you feel yesterday from the material point of view? It was nice. People were in a happy mood. They were crowded outside the pubs, you know, drinking on the pavement and all that. And, people were not wearing any coats. What did the temperature go up to? 21 degrees or something like that? Yeah, on October 27th. So you think this is so nice. This is enjoyment. Normally October 27th is rainy and windy, but the temperature is normally 7 degrees or something? 7 or 8 degrees. Yesterday was so nice. Who could argue with that, right? Wasn't yesterday nice? Anyone could argue with that? Anyone? You say no? Nice weather. It seems that way. But someone who knows, what do they say? That it was so warm yesterday is a sign there'll be a reaction in the future. It's not supposed to be that warm, even though it felt good. It feels good now, but very soon, as the karma chakra spins, there'll be a severe reaction. In fact, the nice day was merely an indication of the reaction to come. It's unnatural for it to be that warm in London on October 27th, even though it felt good. It's the warning, watch out. Nature is unbalanced. The natural cycles are disturbed. There's going to be a reaction. So already the weather people, they're announcing, this is very strange. This high temperature on October 27th. We are in for a very cold winter. Be prepared for freezing temperatures. High oil prices. Be prepared. So, the ordinary person thinks, God's mercy, what a warm day yesterday. October 27th was so nice. Oh. Praise the Lord. Thank God. We were so happy. Oh. Right? That would be so. It seems natural. Thank the Lord for such a nice day. But later, you may go crying to the same Lord. Oh. Nature, what is it doing to us? That so-called nice day on October 27th caused huge disturbances in terms of the environment. It indicated, there's an omen indicating tough natural times are coming. But it felt good for a while, didn't it? Now, try to understand this. Are you ready? It's the same thing with sense gratification. It seems nice, doesn't it? Such a nice feeling to gratify your senses. Even will thank God for it. Oh, thank God for material happiness. Oh. But in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada points out something in a very ingenious way. That feeling of so-called happiness that you get from sense gratification actually is your worst enemy. Because that so-called good feeling binds you to the karma chakra. You think you're feeling good, but actually you're being bound. That so-called good feeling makes you attached. You become very deeply bound, and then the reaction comes. It's a setup, in other words. Just like yesterday's warm temperature. It was a setup. An intelligent person can understand, this shouldn't be. We shouldn't have a warm day yesterday, October 27th. Even though it felt good, it shouldn't be, and it means something inauspicious is coming in the future. Now you have to be so intelligent to think the same way about material pleasure of any type, and there are not that many types. Yeah. That the so-called good feeling is inauspicious. It's making me attached, it's binding me to the karma chakra, it's setting me up for the reaction. If you're smart, you'll think like that. But if you're not so smart, if you haven't studied Bhagavad Gita, you'll be like the people yesterday who thought, this is wonderful. Let's go to the pub, have a drink outside, talk with our friends. Wow, October 7th, 27th, so warm. But even the materialists were pointing out, ooh, this is not good. Very abnormal. This means austerities are coming in the future. This means suffering is coming in the future. Now, why can't we see that about our own life? Why do we become so bewildered by material happiness? Often people criticize devotees. Why are you against material happiness? What's wrong with it? You some kind of killjoy or what? It's a warm day yesterday. You just enjoy it, you know? You listen to music, you smile at people, you say nice things to people. Isn't that what life's all about? Krishna consciousness is so extraordinary that it makes a properly practicing devotee not pay attention to even material happiness. That is how extraordinary Krishna consciousness is. is think about that. Material distress is an agitation on the mind. You all know that. When you're in anxiety, when you're stressed out, oh, it's a very miserable feeling. You can get relief for your body, but for your mind, when your mind is just totally in a state of panic, anxiety, oh, how do you relieve the aches of your mind? Of course, that's why people take intoxication, but it doesn't solve the problem. Now, you can understand that material distress is an unwanted agitation. But what about material happiness? Isn't that an agitation also? It's like a fever that just hits you. Can you remember? I'm happy. Oh, I feel good. Yes. Ah. And you find some friends. Aren't we happy? It's a bizarre condition. And just as soon as it comes, it goes. So, what is it about bhakti that makes a devotee look down on even material happiness? That is what we have to understand. If we're going to grasp the meaning of this translation, how both the demons and the demigods were working hard, apparently in the same way. The demons, however, were unable to achieve the result they desired. In other words, you strive for material happiness, you don't get it. And very quickly, you'll see that the reactions are coming. Whereas the devotee doesn't strive for material happiness, although the devotee is endeavoring. And wonderfully, by the devotee's efforts, he or she goes back to God. And the devotee's always thinking, I don't deserve what Krishna has arranged for me. I don't deserve what Krishna is giving me. I didn't make enough effort. And look and see, just look what Krishna is doing for me. So this is the difference. So let us not think that Krishna has shortchanged us, or he's a sadist, he's giving us a beautiful process that's impossible to follow. Let us rearrange our life constantly. That is what it means to be a bhakta. We'll end with this point. To be a bhakta means you have taken the vow to constantly rearrange your life for Krishna's pleasure. Not that you just do it when you're a new devotee or when you take initiation. Constantly, all your life, you're always adjusting, readjusting, refining, so that your actions are fully in line with Krishna's purposes. So, should we stop here or take any questions? Or whatever you say, just say it. Say the word. Yes. Thank you very much. Okay. What do I read?